Welcome to the Counselors of Real Estate's Top 10 in 10 podcast series. In these approximate 10-minute episodes, we'll discuss one of the prevailing 2023-24 top 10 issues affecting real estate. I'm your host, Jonathan Schein, CRE, and CEO and founder of the Real Estate Limited Partners Institute, better known as RELPI, in New York. The Counselors of Real Estate are trusted advisors finding solutions to complex real estate challenges. Experienced, innovative, principled, and credentialed problem solvers, counselors reside in 22 countries, practice in many more, and offer expertise in 60 real estate disciplines across all asset classes. Each has earned the prestigious CRE designation. Our guest for this episode is Casey Conway, CRE, founder of Caseynomics, LLC in Norcross, Georgia. He is also an independent director of UMH Properties, a real estate investment trust focusing on affordable workforce housing communities. Casey was invited to the membership of the Counselors in 2009 and is well known for his to-the-point analysis and interpretation of economic indicators, fiscal policies, and property market data. Casey was the subject matter expert for the number 6 issue on the compilation of the Counselors 2024 Top 10 Issues Affecting Real Estate, Population Shock, Migration's Impact on Real Estate. To review all the issues in this year's report, visit CRE.org/top10. Welcome, Casey.
Hey, thank you, Jonathan. Thank you for that kind introduction.
You got it. So, first question. People were moving to new cities and states well before the pandemic. While the migration shift was intensified by the pandemic and remote work, isn't the fundamental driver behind this shift simply affordability?
It really was. That's what was driving it. And with the pandemic hitting, we really had to perfect remote work. We had to go to an alternative, you know, game plan. And so employers that had, you know, historically resisted not having everybody in the office really had to go to a plan B. And so now the workforce said, I can't afford whatever West Coast or Northeast city, and they could move to where there was affordability. And now we're learning it's a little more complex than that. It's not just an affordability issue.
As a matter of fact, this happens to be March 11th, which is the 4th anniversary of when a pandemic, actually a global pandemic, had actually been declared, and people didn't even know what to do or where to go. So let's move on from that. So is it some of these cities got outpriced by affordability as more people were moving in? Boise's a great example. Has that shifted in any way?
No, it's actually exacerbated. So we're now seeing that affordability migration. So you mentioned Boise, which is a great example, but look at Salt Lake City, where the median price of a home is over $500,000. Look what's happened in Denver. Look what's happened in Phoenix. And then if you even go into the Southeast, look what's happened throughout Florida. I mean, almost every part of Florida looks like Miami in terms of cost or whatnot. And there are other issues of exacerbating that. But even in the Southeast, you know, small markets like a Greenville, Spartanburg, South Carolina, or a Nashville. I mean, a Nashville is almost like a Boise, Idaho, or a Salt Lake now. So, yeah, it's like squeezing on Jell-O. We squished that affordability out everywhere now. So now we all enjoy the fun of not having affordability.
I guess that's going to cause more societal pressures than we can imagine at this point. So along these lines, you obviously follow the U-Haul Growth Index, which provides insights into where people are moving. What cities, I mean, you mentioned a few cities that are growing, but what cities are really benefiting from migration and what characteristics do they have in common?
Yes, great question. So the new U-Haul report, which came out in January, it's my Christmas gift that I wait for every year. So it comes out first, second week of January. And again, you know, Texas doesn't like being number two at anything. So they came out number one again for the third year in a row, followed by Florida. But when you go deeper in that, the Carolinas are a big part of that story. They were in the top five. Tennessee, you know, surprised I'm in Atlanta, Georgia area, and Georgia didn't make that top ranking. So it's kind of scattered out and abroad. But the theme that's really occurring is the high quality elements that match up with the affordability in these secondary markets. So if you're a secondary market, you have high quality of life items. So you have good schools, you have universities, you have proximity to a major airport or good airport service. Those are all important elements. Crime not being bad, public safety, all the things that we're talking about as we go into an election year. And so that's kind of a theme. In the secondary cities, people realize you really don't have to give up. So like you said, if you went to a Boise, Idaho, or if you went to, you know, a Salt Lake, look at the new Delta terminal at Salt Lake, or you go to Nashville, you know, even a Huntsville, Alabama, These are great cities with high quality of life. The other element that they all seem to have in common, this education and workforce. So where we can create and deliver the skilled workforce. So when you look at some of the southern markets, in particular the Carolinas, Tennessee, and Alabama, they all have really good universities that are producing the kind of skilled workforce that if Mercedes or BMW or Hyundai or any of these high skilled, automobile or EV type manufacturers want, they can get those, and those students can afford that education that can be delivered. So I think it's gone from affordability to quality of life to proximity to important services and the infrastructure, and then that education element at the university to develop the workforce.
Well, let me ask you a little bit about infrastructure before we move on to our final question. As more and more people, as there is an influx into these cities, are these cities going to start facing some of the infrastructure issues that some of the old line cities have faced? I hear traffic in Austin, traffic in Miami are actually horrendous now because of the influx of people.
Absolutely. And you do see that. And they really weren't prepared. And they're trying to figure out how do they fund it. So do we go to property taxes? Do we go to income taxes? So we're back to all of the square one issues that the counselors for decades have been trying to, to advise folks on is, we all want growth, but then when we get it, it's kind of like that dog catching the car. What do I do with it? How do I not get run over? So you are seeing those, and it's not just, roads and bridges, but it's the Society of Civil Engineers does their every 4-year report when they look at levees, they look at water, they look at sewer, they look at schools, they look at all those issues. So that Society of Civil Engineers report is a good one to see. All those secondary markets experiencing growth ought to go read that report. We'll be getting another one in about a year and a half, 2 years, and look at how do you plan ahead for those issues.
What you're talking about is kind of public social infrastructure, schools, hospitals, and the such.
Exactly.
So finally, is the U.S. becoming less central business district concentric and more suburban or secondary market concentric?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So when you look at kind of infrastructure, you look at, entertainment, you look at leisure and travel, the CBD is still a place where I think people want to go. They want to go to New York. There's a lot to do there and whatnot. So from that standpoint, but from a work standpoint, I think we're in a reassessment. And I hearken it back to after World War II, when all the GIs came home. And what did the GIs tell us they wanted to do? They said, we want to create this new thing called a suburb and a regional mall. And for the next 50 years, that's going to dominate how and what we do real estate. We're kind of in that mode right now where the younger workforce, whether we want to put labels, millennials, Gen Z, whatever, they're redefining. And even old guys like me, I'm 61. I don't like commuting. I don't like wearing a necktie. And so if I can have a higher quality of life, I can be productive. I can go, see family events and engage more and be in proximity to a good airport and travel somewhere. I'm putting in more hours each week than I did when I was in my 30s and 40s at 61 years of age because remote work and technology and, you give me back 2 hours of commuting time and all those other things, I can be a whole lot more productive. So I think as people have been able to discover the value proposition of secondary markets, especially those that are in proximity to a major market. So for example, me in Atlanta, you got the big airport where I can get 5 flights a day to anywhere I want to go to. So that's why I'm still anchored here. But if I could be an hour or 2 hours away and I could just drive over to Atlanta and do the same thing, but have a higher quality of life and say Huntsville, Alabama, Birmingham, Alabama, up in Tennessee or the Carolinas, that's real enticing even to the baby boom generation. So I think this is the time the secondary and suburban markets have been waiting for the last 30 years.
No one's ever said, gosh, I miss my commute.
That's right. Or my necktie, right?
So thank you, Casey. We're grateful for your knowledge and contributions to this year's Top 10 Issues Affecting Real Estate Report. Join us next time for another discussion of one of the top 10 issues affecting real estate. I'm Jonathan Chine. On behalf of the Counselors of Real Estate, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Top 10 in 10.